Hi, welcome to Sacred Conversations with Vision Battlesword. This is an audio series created by me and by the Sacred Light spiritual community for our own benefit as well as for anyone else that might be interested to hear it. This represents a new kind of podcast or a new type of audio series that I call a community conversation. So I'll be talking with the Sacred Light spiritual community and we'll explore all types of topics from truth to philosophy, spirituality, consciousness, psychedelics, and many, many more. And the goal of this is just to explore reality, to explore truth, and to see what all of the different pieces and all the different perspectives are of reality that we can put together into an integration of an entirely new philosophy. This special episode is a reproduction of Vision's appearance on Michael Hollinger's podcast, Awakened Kings.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Awakened Kings. And today we have Vision Battlesword. Welcome to the show, Vision.
What's up, Michael?
So I brought Vision onto the show because he has created a new model for relating called intentional autonomous relating. And the first thing that I like about, well, there's a lot of things I like about the many words you have in this intentional and autonomous and relating, but I like how, first off, it's about relating as a verb and not a relationship, as if I'm in a relationship, which, talk about that a little bit, like the difference between being in a relationship and relating with somebody.
Yeah. Well, you hit the nail on the head. It's about doing versus being. You know, it's one of the most core fundamental principles of IAR to me. It was kind of a big, I don't know, frame switch for me when I realized that when we talk about being in a relationship, we're identifying ourselves with what is essentially a dynamic. We're giving away a part of ourself or a part of our identity in a way when you think of that. And so for me, it's just been a really, really big reframe and upgrade to think of all of my relationships as something that I'm doing. They're a process. So I like to say, and this is what I teach, you know, in my workshops and coaching and trainings with IAR, is that a relationship is something that we have with each other. It's not something that we are or are in. So yeah, a relationship is a dynamic. It's a process. It evolves. It's in a state of change. And it's not something that is inherently a part of us as a person.
Mm-hmm. I like that. The other thing I like about IAR, the intentional autonomous relating, is we're always relating with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, for men especially, it can seem like, okay, I'm in a relationship with a woman now, or, you know, maybe I've got relationships with men. But we're just relating, and there's no, like, whether I'm in a relationship or not in a relationship, we're always relating one way or the other. So it's kind of creating this gradient of, like, let's get clear on, and intentional ultimately was, and that's what part of intentional autonomous relating is, be very intentional about what, how we are relating at many levels, whether it's men to men, men to women, and vice versa. And so talk about, I guess what I'd like to know first off is, where did this idea of IAR come from? So, I mean, this is something you've been working on for a while, I'm sure. So where did it start for you?
So for me, IAR started when I came out of my second marriage. And I've been doing this kind of serial monogamy thing for my entire adult life. And, you know, I've had many great relationships. I've been married twice. And you know, I've had two very different marriages. I had two very different divorces, but there were a lot of common themes that I was noticing in the relationships that I was having with women specifically. And one of those themes was codependency. One of those themes was jealousy. One of those themes was dissatisfaction in different ways. And when I came out of my second marriage, I just decided I'm not doing this again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do something different. Not just repeat the same pattern. I was really, really committed to that. But I didn't know exactly what I was doing. I didn't know what is the new thing that I was going to do. But I had an intuition that it started from setting my intentions very specifically. So being more intentional, being more conscious of what exactly is it that I want from relationships with people generally. That was kind of the key insight. It's like, oh, wait, I'm not looking for a woman. I'm not looking for a partner. I'm not looking for a new marriage or a new wife, let's say. I would like to just have fulfilling, intimate, deep, rich, interesting relationships with people in general. And I'm completely open to who those people could be and what they could be like. But what I really want in my life right now is a deep human connection, more than love or sex or partnership or, you know, any of the things that we would traditionally associate with the quote unquote relationship, which I hate that mm-hmm. word. You know, I hate the fact that people use that word in such a sloppy way,
yeah.
You know, to mean some very, very specific thing, even though that word really refers to a whole lot of different things, or just in a completely ambiguous way.
Even so, more like a situationship now is like, it's even more ambiguous. We can't even like define
right.
it.
right. So yeah, that was the first intuition that I had was, okay, I'm going to set my sights on connection and intimacy with humans first, and just see where that leads. And where it led was this kind of entire new way of looking at relationships altogether.
I notice you still say relationships. It's like, even though you're talking about relating, you still call it relationships?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, what would be the alternative to say I have relations?
Yeah.
Relatings?
Well, I don't know. When I was reading some of your material, I thought that was a part of the model, is looking at the difference between a relationship and relating.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just guess unclear about what you mean by that. If it's, you still determined to say that you're in a relationship with someone if you're already relating with them?
Well, if we're relating, then we have some kind of a relationship.
Okay.
But I think the key distinction for me is that a relationship is not something you are or something you're in, but it's something you do and it's something you have. That's kind of the bit flip for me.
And every second is a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're always choosing and we're always deciding what kind of relationship would we like to have? What parts of this are working for us or not working for us? And really, what are our intentions here with and for each other? What needs are we trying to get met, or would we like to meet for each other? What are our desires? What are our you know, what are the things that we enjoy about each other,
mm-hmm.
and really focusing in on that.
Yeah. And I like how you just mentioned desires, but you even go so far as to create these different channels of desire. And you talked to me about this, I don't know, maybe it was about a year ago, I think. And what really hit home for me is even separating the difference between intimacy and sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a big one that a lot of people get confused, especially men. Is it like, oh, if I'm intimate with a woman, then we're having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got all kinds of friendships with women where I feel like I'm intimate with. I'm having very deep conversations, sharing my soul with, really sharing deep secrets and things that I get to, you know, look for maybe a feminine perspective on and sharing my heart with. I feel like that is an intimate relationship, but there is no way going to be sex with that woman. And so I really appreciate that distinction. The channels that you're talking about where you get to decide where you want to relate with someone. Where'd you come up with these channels?
You know, a big part of it started with a conversation I was actually having with a friend of mine. I'm not sure if it's someone that you know. Do you know Jackson Sullivan?
The name sounds familiar, but I don't think I know him.
I think a big part of it came from a conversation I was having with him when I was just trying to break down for him what this new thing is that I'm doing. And I was doing it very intuitively, and I didn't have a system for it. I didn't have a lot of definition for it. But I just, it felt very different in terms of the way that I was seeking to have relating and relationships with people, and especially women. And yeah, there was just some particular point in a conversation where I started breaking it down and realizing the level of granularity that I was starting to approach things with, in terms of separating things that usually we take as a given, that tend to come together as a package.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of call this the romantic partnership package, or the romantic life partner package. And what we tend to assume about a type of relationship that we're trying to have with someone or someone's, depending on, you know, what your preferences are,
mm-hmm.
is that it's a loving, affectionate, intimate, sexual partnership. And we kind of take all of that together and we call that, that's what happens when you unpack the word romantic.
Okay.
It seems to me. I think that's really where it started for me, was unpacking that word and trying to figure out, like, well, what exactly do we mean when we say, well, I'm looking for something romantic, or I'm not. I'm looking for like a just friendship or something along those lines. And I think sometimes we include friendship as part of romance as well, but I think sometimes we don't necessarily feel that's necessary. But for me, it was just a huge awakening when I recognized the difference, the distinctions between love, sex, intimacy, and affection.
Mm-hmm.
How these are actually four very different things. They don't have to come as a package. And in fact, many times it's better if they don't.
Yeah.
But in particular, being able to separate out sex from intimacy and affection in particular, I think it opens up a lot more richness of our relationships that we can have with each other. And it takes a lot of pressure off
mm-hmm.
relationships sometimes in a lot of ways. And I think it also opens up the possibility for a lot of enjoyment that we can have, where sometimes I think we restrict ourselves in those ways because we think, well, intimacy inherently is a part of sex, or intimacy inherently leads to sex, or affection likewise. Mm-hmm. But to me, intimacy just means knowing someone very deeply, you know, sharing yourself with someone in a vulnerable way. That's what intimacy means to me.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. And the love, affection, and intimacy being separate from sex, I can see where, you know, it's said that not many women can orgasm. And I can see where if there's more attention to the love, affection, and intimacy, would be for even the sex, that there's absolutely more safety and being willing to submit and being allowing to like fall into that orgasmic state. And so, I mean, to me, sex doesn't have to be scary then at that point, because it's just a natural part of the next step. And to me, I think it is the last step. It's the very last step of like, we've done all these other things. Now it just feels natural to flow it right into this relationship.
It makes sense to me. You know, I mean, that's kind of how I like for my relationships to develop. I wouldn't necessarily say it has to be that way for everybody.
Yeah.
I think there can be different strokes for different folks. No pun intended. But I want to bring it back to like our needs as men.
Yeah.
And like, we have needs for intimacy.
Yeah.
We have needs for affection and love. And I think that oftentimes gets all tied up in sex for us as mm-hmm. well. And it certainly, you know, I've talked with and had workshops with many women, and that's a big, I don't want to say problem, but that's a common mindset that women have as they're going through life as well, is that they may be wanting intimacy, but having a sense that comes as a package with sex,
yeah.
especially in terms of what men are desiring from them.
Yeah.
But,
and there's too many men, I think, who are absorbed in porn, mm-hmm. where it's like sex seems to be the first thing. And there's, you know, it's almost like a disconnected form of sex, where it's like lacking that intimacy and the affection and the love. And
mm-hmm.
so I think there's a lot of reprogramming we get to help men understand. And, so going back, I mean, that really, really hit home. Because that was about a year ago when you broke that apart for me, the intimacy and sex. And I've never been the same since that. Like, just that one distinction of breaking apart that one thing has changed really my whole outlook on that. So can you name those channels just so like the audience understands what we're talking about?
Sure. Yeah. In the basic IAR, that's Intentional Autonomous Relating Framework, I've got what I call 10 channels of relating. So you can kind of think of these as like radio channels, or the different kind of conduits that we can exchange energy in. And so those are connection, affection, intimacy, love, sex, friendship, partnership, family, spirituality, and mentoring. And I kind of like to look at this as, you know, when I'm teaching this to people or kind of introducing them to the concept for the first time, kind of think of like what we've been given generally in our culture and all throughout our lives is like a menu with three options on it, you know, more or less. It's like you, if you go to the restaurant, it's like, well, would you like the chicken or the fish, you know, or maybe the vegetarian option? Like that's all you get.
Yeah.
And I'm suggesting like we can actually order these things a la carte. You can, you know, you can have any kind of relationship that you want, even if it's not what we would consider to be traditional or typical. And I don't say non-traditional kind of in the sense of, you know, this kind of modern, maybe sexual promiscuity or polyamory or something like that. Although I do believe in polyamory in the sense of sharing a lot of love with a lot of people. That's totally my jam. But I'm saying more along the lines of, you know, what if me and you, Michael, like, what if like our ideal relationship is a really strong connection and we share a lot in the spiritual realm and maybe we actually like have a lot of love for each other and one of us wants to mentor the other. But we don't necessarily consider each other to be like friends. We're not particularly intimate or affectionate with each other. We're not sexual. Like, that's okay. That can be a thing. But we don't necessarily have a name for that or a word for that in our culture. Like, what is that? Well, who cares? That's it's the thing that me and you do.
Right.
That's how IAR works. Is like, what's the thing that me and you do? Let's put that together. Let's define that. Let's talk about it and get clear on what it is. And then we can repeat that conversation anytime we want, anytime it feels like something wants to change.
Beautiful. I love that.
And I like how it's always a choice. So even in any given relationship, we look at something like divorce or something like that, where it's like, hey, this container is no longer working for us. We can step away and now we can choose new relationship where we're going to be co-parenting. So we want to be friendships. We have a friendship here. We still kind of love each other because the love will never go away. So there's all kinds of ways we can still change that channel to that honor that container. So talk a bit more about what a container is.
Okay. Well, a container is just a definition of our relationship that uses some specific terminology so that we can be very clear on it. And in particular, that's the 10 channels that I talked about. And then there's three in my system, there's three levels of intention. So the intentions can be open, closed, or seeking. So depending on, and this is really just a way of having a structured conversation. And it's a way of kind of having a thought process about, well, what kind of relationship would we like to have? So open means I'm open to exploring. I'm open to having some type of relationship in that area. Closed means I'm not. You know, I would not like to share that type of experience with you or share that type of energy with you. And seeking means I'm actively pursuing it. Like, I would actually really like to have that, and I'm open to even initiating that with you if you're open to it. And so a container is kind of the sum total of our intentions. So whether we're open to open or open to seeking or seeking to seeking, then that would mean that we are expressing a desire to have a relationship in that area. Let's say to share affection with each other or intimacy or friendship or anything like that. And then also included in the container is our boundaries and our agreements. So within the scope of those intentions, affection may mean something to you and it may mean something different to me. And so we want to have a conversation to get clear on, okay, well, what exactly, you know, when you say you'd like to have an affectionate relationship, are we talking about regular cuddling, you know, or are we talking about a hug when we see each other or something else, you know, that feels good? The language that I like to use is what feels good and right and comfortable for both of us. Whatever that is, then we can have a boundary in that area or we can have an agreement in that area. So a container is essentially a written, ideally, definition of the relationship that we're having right now.
Interesting, written. So you go as far as writing it down.
I think it's important, actually. Yeah. Depending on the type of relationship that you're having.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't maintain written containers and agreements with every single person that I'm relating with, obviously.
Yeah.
But like your serious relationships, you would. And that doesn't just mean serious relationship doesn't just mean, you know, someone that you're having sex with or in a partnership with. It could mean like, you know, strong, long-lasting friendships might deserve that level of intention and attention to actually write some things down about your relationship that you want to make sure that you're both clear on.
Yes. So in your workbook, you have all the channels and you have like different levels each channel might be as an example. Do you have like a worksheet that you use for this? Like put a number next to each one. Like where are we on the love? Where are we on the spirituality and the mentorship? And
I do actually. Yeah.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
That's why I asked. I figured you have something like that, you know, I would love to see that. That sounds, because I mean, I understand writing it down, but it seems like it'd be easier to be like, just put some numbers to it.
Yeah, I've got a kind of a fill in the blank template that makes it much easier for people. And that's something that, you know, I kind of provide as part of my workshops or as part of my coaching or my consulting, you know, if I'm helping someone or people, you know, in a relationship or having a relationship. Huh, caught myself. But I also, I'm in the process of creating what I call an IAR journal, which essentially kind of takes the worksheet and distills it down to smaller, kind of more manageable pages in like, well, I like to think of it as, do you remember, you know, maybe back from, I think it was more popular in like the 70s and the 80s for people sometimes to have a little black book. You know what I'm talking about?
I've heard of that, but yeah, I'm not too familiar.
So like a little black book is this idea that I think a lot, mostly men would keep records of their conquests.
Okay.
It's like, so-and-so slept with her on such and such date, you know, whatever. It's like my little black book. And I think contacts, like people that you might want to, you know, go contact again. I like to think of the IAR journal as like the new paradigm little black book. It's like the relationships that are really important. People that I actually really want to sit down with and have a conversation with to get really, really clear, because our relationship is valuable to me. I want to make sure that our boundaries and our agreements are like we've talked about them, and because I want to stay in integrity with them, and you know, I want to avoid tension and conflict, or just make sure that we like we're clear on where we stand with each other.
Yeah.
And we can always go back to that if we ever wanted to refresh that for ourselves. So yeah, I'm creating different kind of tools for folks to use the system more in their daily life and to make it easier to integrate.
Are you seeing like an app for the phone for this kind of thing?
I certainly foresee that. Yeah. I would like for that to be the direction that it goes.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, these words like intention and container, even closed, open. It sounds to me, and reminds me a lot of like plant medicine ceremony. And it just seems to me like you've brought some of that language into relationships. It's like we can be intentional. We can have this closed container. And there's like all this trust built into it. And it's like bringing intention into how we're going to relate out in the world. Which is kind of cool, because in plant medicine ceremony, it's like it's almost like it's not in the quote unquote real world. It's like outside here. So now we're going into the quote unquote real world where we're relating with people. We can bring that same technology of intention and being very and how that relates to people. I love
right.
that.
Right. No, that's exactly right. I think that was, you know, one of the top five probably like kind of key insights that led to this whole thing. You know, the first one being, let's unpack romantic. What is that all about? What's in there? And are these different things that we can have with each other, you know, that don't have to come as a package? And then the idea of thinking of a relationship as a container was maybe the second or third of those kind of light bulb moments for me, where it's like, well, wait a second, we create a container for a retreat, for a ceremony, for, you know, a coaching engagement or any other type of business arrangement. Why would we not have a container for a relationship? It just makes sense. Like, hey, let's get clear. Let's have boundaries, agreements, expectations. Let's talk about things, you know, before they come up, rather than, you know, in a reactive mode.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially the word intention. It comes in even like for intention for the day, intention for this podcast, intention for everything. It's just, and that's a practice I've been working on more and more, is realizing how powerful it is to actually have the intention of what I'm doing. It's so easy to get lost in, like, you know, default mode and everything else, especially, you know, and when you're relating with somebody else, especially if two people kind of go off in default mode and it's like, what are we doing now? So to remember, come back into, so I imagine it's super powerful for two people, especially in a relationship, to understand this language, because it is a whole language model. It's everything. It's, we speak differently in this model, I imagine, than how we talk to each other. It's a whole different model.
It doesn't have to be as strict and formal, you know, as maybe the workbooks,
yeah,
or you know, kind of the way that we've been talking to each other just now. But yeah, that is the idea of reprogramming through language. That actually is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed certainly that there's a lot of the things that we've been told and the way that we have been taught, and not even really formally, because I think that's another kind of key piece of the puzzle here, is, yeah, is like, we never really get the relationship talk, mm-hmm, do we? I mean, you maybe get the sex talk, but does any, you know, when do we ever actually get taught?
Well, it's basically like boyfriend, girlfriend, fiance, marriage.
Yeah.
It's like,
but where did you get that idea?
From your parents, or like just TV, movies?
You just kind of soak it up from, yeah, the environment, right? It's, mm-hmm, just, you just kind of get it through osmosis, or what you saw modeled in your family of origin, maybe the way things played out in your peer group.
The best thing I had was the birds and the bees talk with my father. It's like, you're, right, going to get married, you're going to have kids, here's how you use your tool, and here's blah, 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 and then you're going to have the white picket fence in the house, and you're going to, you know, have the car, and
it's, right,
just, that's what we do.
But not the part about like, okay, so when you're dealing with conflict,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh.
Or like, here's how you process tension, or, you know, talk about your feelings. You know, some of us got that through therapy, or, you know, different avenues, but it's just not part of our basic training, mm-hmm, our basic programming that we get. We just kind of pick it up from osmosis. And so, you know, I have started to kind of like look at the language that comprises our programming, the programming that we have received. And yeah, I find it to be lacking. You know, I find it to be ambiguous. I find it to be actually even intentionally manipulative, or misdirecting, mm-hmm, in a lot of ways. Like, just take that one. It's one of the most powerful examples for just about everyone, myself included, is sex and intimacy.
Yeah.
We use those words not just interchangeably, but we use one actually as a disguise for the,
right,
other.
We're intimate. Right? Now we're intimate with each other. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many different ways that we talk about sex without saying the word sex.
Yeah.
Like,
it was taboo. Even the word sex is taboo.
Did you sleep with them? Did, yeah, you hook up? Did, yeah, you know, like, et cetera, et cetera. We've got 1,000 words to avoid saying what it really is. But yes, the whole idea of IAR is to help us to create a new program for ourselves through language. And then once we kind of have that, you know, once we've kind of absorbed and integrated that, then things can become more casual. But it's like nonviolent communication. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with nonviolent, yeah, communication? Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of idea. There's a stage in the learning process where it can be helpful to be very formal,
right,
with things, until you've established a kind of muscle memory with, yeah, it.
Also, why it's important that the person you're relating with knows that language too.
Yeah.
And they're willing to be formal at first. And then, and I could see this being like even an experiential type of retreat, where like you're spending a couple of days going deep in the formality of all this. So it's like really hammered into the mind, the body, and the heart. And then when you come away, like, you can't help but not speak this new language. It's just in you at that point.
Totally, totally. And it definitely is most powerful in my experience with two people that are, you know, that are invested in the idea of it, that, mm-hmm, that sincerely, you know, want to try something new or embrace the concepts of it and speak the language. And also, it actually only takes one to tango,
yeah,
with IAR. It works even if you are only practicing it, which again is like NVC in that way too. Like, the other person doesn't necessarily need to know anything about nonviolent communication.
Yeah.
If you're practicing it, you can actually have a significant influence on the energy and the dynamic of the situation just from being empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
This is the exact same way. you just showing up and being clear, being intentional, asking questions about the other person's intentions, you know, expressing yourself and like what things really mean to you, it automatically has a transformative effect on the dynamic.
I can see that. Most people just want to be heard. And so if they're just heard because you're using the right language, like, I see you, I hear you, I want you to tell me what you need. People are like, oh, you actually hear me right now? Like, great, like pull up a chair, let me talk. You know, so, right. Yeah, like, that goes a long way.
Yeah, and I've seen it, you know, in my own life many times without ever explaining anything about, oh, hey, by the way, I've created this new system and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But just speaking to people in a natural way, like, you know, hey, I just want to let you know right now I'm not seeking sex in this moment, but I'm actually really enjoying our connection. I'd be open to sharing some affection with you right now if you're open to it. And what I mean by that is, you know, just like thinking maybe I could put my arm around you and you know, we could just be a little closer together while we talk. But I just want to be clear, like, I'm not seeking sex right now.
Right.
I'm enjoying our connection. I'm open to developing intimacy. That's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just used IR language in a perfectly textbook way, but it doesn't have to sound, it can sound totally natural.
Yeah.
And people respond very, very well to it, is what I've noticed. Like, people are very rarely like put off by it or suspicious of it, although it can happen. But normally people are just like, whoa, you're a really good communicator. It's like, that was very clear.
Yeah. It's on the words and the body language. I think too, that there's a way to even use a IAR in a way where just knowing the channels and knowing what channel I want to show up in, because even that open, close seeking, I can show with body language, knowing like I'm creating a closed off, like I can be like, I'm closed to sex with you. And my body language shows that, but I'm open to affection or love or other channels. People can feel that too.
Yeah. And that kind of goes into the, I know you've had an opportunity to kind of look at most of the material all the way into the kind of more advanced concepts. Mm-hmm. But as you know, it goes much deeper down the rabbit hole than just the kind of behavioral channels, like what I talked about, and the language, but also, you know, well into the energy system and how we relate with each other there as well. And the kind of like the unspoken relationship.
Where do you see IAR going? Do you think you get the whole model figured out and done for them for now, and you just really want to teach it, or is there more coming that you want to expand upon?
There's more that I've developed kind of in my own life that I haven't kind of formally baked into the curriculum or the pieces that I've been using kind of in my consulting practice for now. So like where I see it going is, number one, I would like to get all the rest of that stuff kind of, you know, out of my head and onto paper and really organize the material that I have, I think, in something more that looks like a formal book, as well as like an online curriculum.
I was thinking about that when I was reading through it. I was like, this is a book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely formalized, and you could definitely expand and make that a book.
Yeah. And I certainly think there's enough material to warrant that. And that project is exciting to me. I would love to turn the worksheets and the whole, like, the process of how you have that conversation and create a container with someone to create some kind of software or some kind of app to facilitate that, like a software-based tool. But the tool itself is not the thing. Like, you can have the conversation, you can do this process with nothing more than a pen and a piece of paper or pencil and a piece of paper, you know, and the ideas. And that's what's really important to me about it, is it doesn't rely on any tool. It's a mindset more than anything else.
I can see a whole community around this even.
Where do you see, a community?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've seen apps done well where people create communities around them, like find other people who speak the IAR language, or even if it's not even, if it's just online community. But I think I know you're saying it only takes one to tango, but I think it's a lot more fun when people can have the same understanding and language and can speak that way. And I think I can see this being a movement even. Absolutely. I think this is bringing a whole missing language piece, and it's a very healing. And now you're talking about transformation. there's a transformational element to this, but I think it's a very healing process for people to understand. And again, going back to the word autonomous is really important, because this is about having sovereignty of self. Mm-hmm. You know, understanding like I have these channels, these are open or closed for me depending on, and then being able to have enough self-worth in myself to say, I'm willing to stand for myself and let you know through language or body language or communication, whatever it is, that this is open, this is closed, and I'm willing to honor my boundaries. And I think for like boundaries is a great word. And I've been looking at this for a while lately too, is like boundaries can be so permeable, you know, and as people step into self-worth and their boundaries, these channels are a great way to help see the permeability in the boundaries. It's like, okay, I can now see where I have permeability in this boundary. I just didn't know what to call it. Now I can see, like, I was wide open and I didn't know it, you know, so I can now close that channel. Mm-hmm. But these channels I can choose to have open.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, because it really highlights another part of the value of IAR.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm closed to is at least as important, if not more important,
yeah,
than what it is that I'm open to and seeking. And a lot of people that you know, have given me feedback about how they've used IAR in their own lives have reflected that the channels that they've closed and the energy that they've get back from the energy that they free up from having these open loops with people, where it's like, are we, aren't we, mm-hmm. did we, will we again?
Have an energy leak.
It's an energy leak, and mm-hmm. it's a psychological distraction, and it kind of just creates confusion in the relationship, where, you know, maybe there are some people that you're not really having a relationship with anymore, or it doesn't really make sense anymore, and you fully close that container, and that's one way to do it. But I think there's another piece which can in some cases be even more powerful, which is just, what are the things that are actually really valuable to us? And what if we take the rest of that stuff just off the table and just focus on these pieces, and actually to have a relationship re-blossom and re-flourish in a whole different way, mm-hmm. and in a way that's actually really where we are really actually getting our needs met with each other now, because we're not distracted with whatever this other thing is, was, could have been, could be in the future. But like, no, this is the thing that we're actually really doing. Mm-hmm. And this part actually feels really good. And now that energy feels more joyful and more exciting. And, you know, there's something that we're exchanging there. But the piece about the community, my dream for IAR is I would love for as many people to know about it, to share it with each other, and to practice it in their lives as possible. And I sincerely hope and expect that would lead to, you know, people would have a lot of benefits and get a lot of value from that. But selfishly speaking, that's just the world I want to live in.
Yeah.
I actually just want to go through a world where I can have these kind of conversations with everyone and it feels natural. And we're all just kind of relating with and interacting with each other in this way, which is just to say clear and honest, transparent, sincere, and intentional.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that. I think just understanding the channels and the boundaries and the language is everything, you know, and I think we get lost in not understanding how to talk to each other. And I honestly think you got something big here, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really do. I really think this could be a movement,
yeah,
a culture. It could be something that can really like build community. I see you even maybe doing your own like podcast or something on this. Mm. I see you really like bringing this to the world, just like any kind of other healing medicine that's out there. I think this is a healing medicine. Absolutely. Mm. I think vulnerability is where we are, you know, in this age right now. It's about vulnerability and really getting in tune with our heart and who we are and what's going on, and sovereignty, which that's a big part of the autonomous part of it. Like I was saying with boundaries, like I think understanding our boundaries and truly coming back to self-love, self-worth, and opening and closing those channels and finding, I think we said at one point was some channels may be a safe channel to open up for now. Like you just said, you can almost rebuild a relationship by closing out channels that aren't working, just to come back to a safe channel for a while, rebuild that, and then open back up channels again. So Yeah, I think this is a very powerful technology you've created. I'd love to see you like expand this and really take it to another level.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, that feedback really means a lot to me. And yeah, it really, it helps me, provides me with a lot of motivation to continue. I agree with you. I think there's something here. It's like had a huge positive impact in my life. It's completely changed my life. It's completely overhauled, you know, just how I relate with people altogether. And a lot of other people that I've shared it with have had great success as well. And at the same point, it's kind of like a blessing and a curse at the same time, because the whole idea of conscious relationships and, you know, new paradigm this and evolutionary that and transformational the other thing is, it's just, there's a lot of relationship experimentation, exploration, people presenting new systems and different stuff. And so, you know, over the past few years, it's felt a little discouraging, I just have to say, I just kind of feel like taking IAR out in the world, it's hard for me to figure out how to differentiate it from all of the other things out there, like conscious speed dating and, you know, all of the different kind of non-traditional relationship ideas. And maybe it's just the community that I happen to be, this like little micro bubble in Austin that I happen to be a part of, where it feels like everybody's talking about, you know, how to transform your relationships and everything else. And maybe there's a much, much wider world out there that is open and available to be reached. But it feels good for me to hear you and others give that reflection that you think there's something valuable here. And it gives me the motivation to want to take it to the next level.
Yeah. I invite you to look at it as not just relationships. I mean, maybe it's not the right term even, because I think this is like, again, the whole coming back to sovereignty and like knowing how to speak for yourself, these boundaries. This is something I've been really working on for a long time, still working on boundaries. Boundaries is not an easy thing to understand. And I know boundaries is absolutely linked to self-love, like I was saying before. And that's something that I've really had to work on a lot for myself. And then seeing how these channels relate to boundaries, there's something in here around sovereignty and self-love and boundaries that is like way bigger than relationships.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's all about sovereignty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got the word autonomous.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. In the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your words are very, very intentional. Like, I love the three words you put in there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's totally about sovereignty. It's totally about, you know, the if there's one core idea or thesis of IAR in general, it's that we have to be starting from a place of sovereignty if we want to have any kind of a healthy functional relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's kind of a tagline I have, is that IAR is the antidote to codependency. And that's really what it's meant to be.
Totally.
Like that's why I created it for myself in my own life, is because I was just sick and tired of having codependent, jealous relationships, to be perfectly blunt about it. And getting, you know, in relationships that kind of suck you into, or allow yourself to get sucked into this kind of what I call unintentional entanglement, the so-called relationship escalator, where it's just one thing leads to another, just like you were saying, the birds and the bees talk that you got as a kid. It's just like, well, this is how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
good luck, kid.
This leads to that, sex leads to marriage, and off you go, Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what I realized is that when relationships are working the best, feeling the best, when there's the least codependency, when there's the most joy and intentionality between two people, or any number of people, but let's start with two, it's when everyone involved is comfortable with themselves and knows that they're whole and complete and okay.
Yeah.
It's counterintuitive in a weird sort of way. It sounds like a little bit of a paradox in the culture that we come from. But the reality is that you and me are going to have the best relationship that we possibly can when we both know that we can walk away from it and it's going to be okay.
Yep.
I'm going to be okay. You're going to be okay. We're both going to be fine. Now, from that place, what would we like to do with each other? What kind of relationship would we like to have with each other. So it's always coming from a place of motivation and choice from reaching out or from turning toward, which from our previous conversation, I recognize now is essentially coming from the heart,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming from that place of really true love or mm-hmm. universal love. But it has to start from standing in your own power. Man, woman, any kind of human, any kind of sentient being, it has to start from standing in a place of your own power, your own sovereignty, your own autonomy, and then making a choice mm-hmm. rather than being motivated from a sense of fear, lack, scarcity, deprivation of any sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, that word choice is synonymous with sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're a victim. If I'm not at choice, then I'm a victim. But if I'm a full sovereign, autonomous man, woman, whatever, I get to make choice.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, would you be open to talking a little bit about boundaries?
Sure.
Because you brought that up and you said that's something that, you know, you're continuing to play with and evolve in your own life. And that certainly, I mean, there's a number of themes that are super common that come up with, you know, people that I talk to about IAR. Boundaries is a big one.
Yeah.
And I have noticed that there's a lot of confusion about just what a boundary even is, mm-hmm. let alone like, how do I work with them? So I'm just curious, you know, how have boundaries been showing up in your own life? And what are you still like, what aspects of that are you still working and playing with?
Well, for a while after being divorced, and this is where you and I talked about a year ago, was, you know, understanding intimacy versus sex. And that was an important conversation that really helped me see and break those channels apart a bit. And then recently it's been about really getting clear on redefining that relationship with my ex-wife and honoring the fact that we had this relationship at one point where we were married and we lived together. And we've been divorced for 3 years, but it was kind of left hanging. We didn't really like close that off. And so having that conversation with her to say, we now get to choose to be the package called co-parents, you know, and I haven't got to go deeper into the different channels with her. And I think that could be a great opportunity to define these different things. Obviously we're not going to be having sex. You know, intimacy may just look different now, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, picking up the kids, sometimes there's a hug exchange because they just, you know, we see each other and we're like, we've hugged and had sex for years. We can still have a hug, right? Like we still have that connection somewhere in there. So I think those are the boundaries that I've been challenged with for the most part is what that looks like. And then also I think as I get to choose on what it looks like for me to move on from that relationship and into a new relationship, I feel like there's some channels that have been left undefined in the old relationship. So I get to look at those channels and be very clear and stop those energy leaks. And I feel like those energy leaks in the old relationship are preventing me from feeling confident and moving forward in the new relationship. So that's what I get to do is really look at those channels and decide what's open, what's closed, and what I'm now seeking into. Like the seeking part is a really important piece, like open, close, and now what I'm seeking.
Mm-hmm. What you're telling me right now sounds a lot like you're talking about getting clear on your intentions.
Yeah.
And so I'm still kind of curious about boundaries. Like what is a boundary to you?
That's a really great question. And this is probably one that I've been really challenged with lately. Because I know what it feels like. I know what the experience is like where a boundary is kind of crossed. But it's like, but I realize that it's been a choice that I've made. It's always a choice. But because I've been unclear about it, and that's what I like about the channels, because I think some channels are still open. That's why I'm going back to the channels, and triggers are always our own doing. So I know that when I'm looking at the situation now from this moment, as you're asking this question, I'm seeing that because I left those channels open, I'm upset with myself. I'm triggered with myself about it. If I'm truly being a sovereign, autonomous person, you know, being, I can look at that and say, I left that channel open.
You're a master of your own energy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
And that's what I love about these channels, because it really is. It's funny, like being in technology for years, I think of like a firewall.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can have certain ports open in a firewall to get technical for a minute.
Yeah.
But it's like these boundaries are there and it's a firewall and I can have this one open, this one closed, this one seeking. And it's like, what do I choose?
Right. I think you know that I spent about 20 years in technology, you know, computer consulting and things like that. So yeah, I never really thought, for some reason, I've never actually truly thought of it in networking terms before, but it's totally that.
And, like, and relationship is networking too. At the same time, we call it networking. We go and meet people.
No, it's so obviously that. It's like port open, port closed, TCP handshake, and we're making a socket. Same thing. But okay, you still haven't told me what a boundary is though.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me like you get a better idea of how to define a boundary. I mean, I think for me, that's what I'm working on right now, is getting clear. So maybe you can help me understand how to define boundaries better for myself.
A boundary is a decision that you make about where you want to keep yourself and your energy. So a boundary is a sort of a line that you draw around yourself and you say, I'm comfortable, I'm safe, I'm content, I'm choosing to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone or anything comes into this space with me that I'm not comfortable with, I'm going to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a boundary is to me.
Okay. So what does withdrawal look like? That term to me sounds to me like an avoidance. Almost like a retreat, withdrawal, going like almost like going back into yourself almost instead of being, I guess, what do you mean by withdrawal?
Well, what I mean is I'm going to pull back my energy. I'm going to, I'm not going to remain in this physical space.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to remain in this specific dynamic. Whatever it is, I'm going to take care of myself. That's essentially what in this case, what withdraw means is it just means I'm going to choose to take care of myself. And that may include not being in this relating right now.
So I think maybe something that comes up for me around this is the right way to handle when the boundary is crossed. So withdrawal to me sounds like I'm running away from it. Like I don't want, I'm just, this is what came up for me. It's my own interpretation of that word. And there's got to be a way that I'm looking for is how do I communicate with the right language to say you've crossed my boundaries without being a dick? Like, fuck you. You're in my fucking boundaries. You know, like
that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
That's exactly why I asked the question. Why I've been like kind of continuing to press for like getting a clear definition of it. Because that is a way that I have noticed the word boundary being used a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it the weaponization of boundaries.
Right.
And what I think has happened is this whole concept of boundaries as kind of a psychological, you know, theory and strategy and behavior and relationships and things kind of came up in the, you know, maybe the 60s, 70s, 80s time frame and kind of entered the therapeutic space, and it entered the like 12-step and recovery space and all of these kind of different realms where it was very useful and very important. And especially like if someone's in an abusive relationship or having an abusive relationship or in a dangerous situation or all of these different things, this is a concept that has helped a lot of people to get clear with themselves on not giving away their sovereignty, not allowing themselves to continue to be abused or to stay in a situation where they're actively being harmed.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think that coming through the kind of 90s, 2000s, politically correct, wokeifying, you know, kind of cultural transition and transformation, the word boundary has been picked up and has started to be used as an offensive instead of defensive.
And the cancel culture comes into it and all that. Yeah.
Where a boundary now, to some people I've noticed, seems to be like a line that I get to draw not around myself, but a line that I get to draw around you and your behavior.
Yeah.
So I'm setting a boundary. So this, the incorrect communication, in my opinion, or the offensive or weaponized communication to be something like, you know, I have a boundary. I need you mm-hmm. to X, Y, Z.
Right.
That's not what a boundary is.
Exactly.
A boundary is a statement about yourself.
Yeah.
That's the most important clarification.
But even then, that's also been weaponized too. Like, I'm feeling offended right now because you aren't calling me a certain thing, or like you're using these words. I'm feeling offended right now. So, you know, it's you put in the I term, but like people also are becoming triggered so easily by the smallest little things, and that becomes weaponized too.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair. And that's I think a more subtle or more slightly more sophisticated way or more passive aggressive way of weaponizing a boundary. But when I say it's a statement about yourself, I mean, it's a statement of sovereignty. I mean, it's a statement about, this is where I'm going to stay. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
This is how I'm going to take care of myself. These are the choices that I would like to make.
And I think the distinction is in who is creating the trigger, right? Like, it's easy for people to be like, you are triggering me versus I'm feeling triggered. There's something coming up for me that is my own shit that I get to look at too. And that's a big part of the work that we get to do to come into sovereignty, to create those boundaries. I think it's challenging to create the boundaries until you're clear on where your triggers start and end too, and knowing like what you created for yourself, or if I created for myself, I'm speaking for myself and my own triggers.
That's fair. Yeah. Well, I think the key point is that, in my opinion, a true boundary represents a person taking ownership of their own experience.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the key distinction.
Yeah.
So it's not to say that there can't be elements in our relationship where I have a trigger in response to some of your behavior.
Yeah.
But the boundary or the question is, well, what am I going to do about that? Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of what are you going to do about that. I can make a request. You know, my boundary can include a request. I can say something along the lines of, you know, Michael, I just want to let you know that I've really come to become aware of how I feel and how triggered I am when you raise your voice, you know, and display a lot of anger when you're talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that, you know, you've got your own feelings and you've got your own expressions and everything else. That I really need to set a boundary with that, which is to say, like, I can handle that for about 5 minutes and not more. And so, you know, I'm going to make a request if we get in that situation again to say, hey, you know, can we take a break? Can you lower your tone? Can we do whatever? And if that's not something that you feel like you can do at that time, then I'm going to have to break off our conversation and go take care of myself.
I like that. Yeah. I like the word request. Request is a good word. Not demanding, not commanding, just letting you know, like, this is important to me, and can you honor that?
Right, yeah. Right. But the I think where we go in the wrong, I think where a boundary becomes ineffective and no longer a statement of taking ownership of your own experience, but becoming about trying to manipulate or change mm-hmm. someone else's behavior, is if we were to say to something like, you know, Michael, I really don't like when you talk to me that way, and I have a boundary that I don't ever want to be spoken to that way again. That's not a boundary. That's an ultimatum.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a really good point. And it's very subtle, but it's also energetically felt way differently.
Totally. And notice in the first example, at no point am I saying to you, like, you can't have that behavior. You can't have that experience. Whatever you're doing is not valid. I'm not invalidating you in any way. I'm just saying, like, look, this is how I know I respond and react to these sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only do it for so long, or I can't do it at all, or I have to change my experience. Mm-hmm. You're taking ownership of yourself at that point. So I say that's sovereignty.
Yeah. And it goes back to relating again, because it's like I get to choose who I want to be relating with in my life, and how I want those relationships to be mm-hmm. had. You know, even if it's just a friendship, like, if we're going to be friends, this channel of friendship that's open has a certain way it gets to look. And mm-hmm. I get to define that channel.
Mm-hmm. We get to define it, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we get to fight. You're saying the two of us together, we get to define it.
Well, yes. If we're having a relationship, if we're relating with each other, then presumably this is going both ways.
It is.
So you've got your you've got your desires, your intentions, your needs.
Yeah.
I've got my desires, intentions, and needs. And then our relationship is where those things match up and feel good and right and comfortable for both of us.
Yeah, this is interesting because then it's like, but then if it changes, obviously the boundaries come up. It's like, okay, we agreed, and now you've shifted outside of what we agreed to, and so I'm letting you know that this is beyond the original agreement we had.
Yeah, like, so you're saying,
like, we're going to talk to each other nicely, and now you're yelling at me,
right?
And this is what we agreed to doing,
right?
So I'm letting you know, like. And this is where we get back. What I like about those for the boundary standpoint is like we had the agreement. It's not about me or you. It's like we agreed to this middle piece. Like this is what we agreed to. And so anytime you have an agreement, it's easy to blame the agreement. Like this is the agreement.
Right. Well, I think an agreement and a boundary are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think oftentimes we can have agreements about boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, we can, like, I can state a boundary. A boundary doesn't actually require your agreement.
True.
That's actually just,
well, that's what I was wondering, because you said we agree on it, because I've always thought a boundary is more like a one-way thing. And that's why I was curious, because you brought it back to we, so I was trying to see where that comes back in on we.
Maybe I misunderstood what you were saying. What I was hearing you say was something about the type of friendship that we're having.
I see.
So I was just like, yeah, we would, like, it would be a conversation between us about what type of friendship we're having. But within that context, you can have a boundary. I can have a boundary.
Yeah.
We can also have an agreement,
mm-hmm.
you know, but a boundary ultimately is a statement about yourself, where you're prepared to go, how far you're prepared to go, and where you're not prepared to go, and what you're going to do about it. That's really what a boundary is. Now, I can state a boundary, and then I can say, are you open to having an agreement to respect my boundary?
Yeah.
And then if you say yes, well, now we've got an agreement.
Right.
So, yeah. So that is something that, you know, we could be accountable to at that point. But you don't have to agree to my boundary. I can still have it.
No. And that's where it gets interesting, though, again, because you don't have to agree to my boundary, but that's also the choice you get to make.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I get to make the choice of we're not going to be friends now. That's fine. I'm not going to be relating with you anymore in this way.
Yeah. Yeah. But how much better to have that conversation, you know, outside of a context where you're having a conflict, you know, or a fight or whatever.
Yeah.
But to, like, really get clear with each other about where your boundaries are, what agreements you'd like to have, what your intentions are, and, you know, kind of have that container with each other. Let's just say in a compassionate, in our rational maybe, but in an intentional way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think the way most people do it is we just kind of bump up into each other, bump up against each other. And sometimes it feels good and sometimes it feels bad. And then eventually sometimes it gets messy.
Yeah.
And then that's when we start trying to figure things out.
Yeah. Love that. Well, thanks so much, Vision. This was really enlightening. I enjoyed this.
Thanks for joining me for this sacred conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And don't forget that the conversation can always continue. We can build on a topic that we've already talked about, and we can also start new topics and see how they all weave together. And that's just the exciting thing about this whole journey of exploration, is we don't know where it's going to go, but I'm really excited to find out with you. Please don't be shy to reach out and schedule your sacred conversation on whatever topic is interesting to you. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to talking with you soon.